Professor Slade, you are welcome. You have 10 minutes.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, honourable members. Thank you for the opportunity to make our oral presentations on the review of Section 25. My colleagues, Professor Zaza Bochenpool, Pinar, and Ms. Tina Kotz, and I have prepared a full submission that is available to you. We will be happy to take questions after the 10-minute presentation. I also want to briefly outline our main arguments with regard to the motion to review Section 25 and other clauses to allow for the expropriation of land in the public interest without compensation. The motion that was carried on the 27th of February refers to a review of Section 25 and other provisions to allow for the expropriation of land in the public interest without compensation. The parameters of the review only relate to the expropriation of land, so not all property that is constitutionally protected, and expropriation of land in the public interest, so arguably the expropriation of land for land reform purposes only. And it's in these parameters as set out in the motion that I address you briefly on the following. One of the reasons put forward for amending Section 25 and other clauses is the various challenges and difficulties that impede the achievement of land reform targets. Section 25 was seemingly placed at the center of the crisis regarding the resolution of the land question, as it requires compensation for expropriation. I think it is important to consider what particular provisions in Section 25 would have to be the subject of the amendment for the expropriation of land in the public interest to succeed. And it is seemingly the first part of Section 25 that protects property against unlawful state interference that some deem frustrate land reform. Section 25.2 requires expropriation to be compensated, and Section 25.3 sets out the standard of compensation. I think it is necessary to point out that at a very early stage that it is a fallacy to argue that compensation that must be paid is market value, as that is not the standard. The standard is justice and equity. Similarly, it is a fallacy to argue that no compensation should be paid for the expropriation of land in all cases. I think it was said earlier that that is a context specific. Amending Section 25.2 and or 3 to permit the expropriation of land in the public interest will even not be enough. In the absence of Section 25.2, a property owner may still rely on Section 25.1 to attack a complete extinguishing of rights in land without some type of compensation. And therefore, to permit compensation without expropriation without compensation will also require an amendment of Section 25.1 of the Constitution. It has also been mentioned that Section 25.8 would be amended to specifically allow for expropriation without compensation. Now, amending Section 25.8 to specifically allow for expropriation of land without compensation will again not be sufficient on its own. Amending Section 25.8 and promulgating legislation to effect expropriation of land in the public interest will be in direct conflict with Section 25.2 and, for that matter, 25.1. And will probably not be justifiable in terms of Section 36.1, the General Limitations Clause. Even if Section 25.1, 2, 3, and 8 is amended to allow for the expropriation of land in the public interest without compensation, it raises conceptual difficulties with regard to the expropriation of other property, such as movable property like farm equipment and cars, or intangible property like licenses, or the expropriation of land for public purposes, which includes expropriation for the building of roads, air, and seaports. It appears that any amendment within the parameters of the motion will inevitably differentiate between expropriation of land in the public interest on the one hand and expropriation of property for public purposes on the other. And such differentiation may offend foundational rights and values such as human dignity, equality, and the rule of law, and will be invalid. And any violation that offends those rights and values will not be justifiable in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. Therefore, any amendment of Section 25 to permit expropriation of land in the public interest would also require an amendment of, firstly, foundational values in Section 1 of the Constitution, which requires a higher threshold for amendment. Secondly, other rights in the Constitution, such as the right of access to adequate housing, just administrative action, And thirdly, the general limitations clause also contained in the Bill of Rights, which is an important provision that allows the state to justify why it's not able to fully realize some of the rights in the Constitution. From an academic perspective, this is our main objection, and we speak on behalf of ourselves, against the review and amendment of Section 25 to permit expropriation of land in the public interest without compensation within the mandate given to the Constitutional Review Committee. It will require an entire overhaul of the constitutional design, and that is at the moment seemingly not within the mandate of the committee. And since we have not resolved the land issue, it is questionable whether we should reconsider the design of the Bill of Rights. As such, we are opposed to any amendment of Section 25 to allow for expropriation of land without compensation as some kind of blanket approach where it concerns land reform. We are also of the view that any expropriation for a public good, which includes healing the wounds of the past by accelerating land reform through expropriation without compensation, will have a punitive effect and counter the whole purpose of restoration and reconciliation. There is, in any event, a general duty on governments globally to award some kind of compensation when expropriation occurs. That being said, we acknowledge that land reform is necessary and urgent, and that the pace has been too slow. But without amending Section 25 or redesigning the entire Bill of Rights, the following can be done within the existing framework of the law to achieve said land reform targets. Firstly, the state should use its power to expropriate property for land reform purposes. Various pieces of legislation already authorize the expropriation of property for land reform purposes. Any expropriation authorized in legislation for those purposes will be constitutionally valid as it complies with the requirements set out in Section 25(2). The complaint against compensation not being what the owner would like it to be doesn't detract from the validity of an expropriation. The validity of an expropriation doesn't depend on the compensation that is offered. It depends solely on whether or not it is authorized in the legislation and whether or not it takes place in the public interest, in which case land reform it will be. Secondly, it must be clear to administrators and other functionaries that the compensation standard is not market value, but justice and equity. Compensation can be far below market value or close to zero if it is just and equitable in the specific circumstances. As said earlier, unfortunately, market value is the only easily quantifiable factor in Section 25(3) and doesn't assist both courts and administrators to determine compensation below market value that is still considered just and equitable. And to prevent being stuck on market value, both on the side of the administration and on the courts, legislation should be promulgated that provides more detail as to how compensation should be calculated with reference to the factors set out in the Constitution. In that regard, the Constitution will continue to provide the overarching framework. It provides the authority for expropriation. It sets out a just and equitable standard of compensation, and the details of that is for the elected officials to determine and set out in legislation or in policy. So to effectively implement land reform depends on a number of factors. It requires constitutional legitimacy, which there is, clear policy guidelines, and effective implementation. And it therefore requires a coordinated effort by all relevant role players. The motion adopted by the National Assembly seems to point towards constitutional provisions, specifically Section 25 and others, as an obstacle to receive the said land reform targets. However, it is highly questionable whether the expropriation of land in the public interest without compensation will ever be acceptable in a democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. As briefly mentioned, the expropriation of land without compensation is basically confiscation, which is punitive in nature and contrary to the overall constitutional imperative of healing the divisions of the past and establishing a free and fair society. We submit that the current property clause, coupled by clear guidelines that enable functionaries and courts to unpack the calculation of compensation effectively in different scenarios and endorsed by principle of good governance, can achieve the set reformative goals and objectives. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Honourable members.
Thank you very much. are anticipating questions. Honorable Fultana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We pretty much appreciate you taking us through the legal framework around various sub-clauses of Section 25. But my question is, just from your understanding, based on your presentation, are you aware of the fact that even for purposes of the redistribution program of land reform, the landowners pitched their prices so high that the Valuer General actually said to us in that portfolio committee that it has become virtually impossible to get any reasonable prices. He said that they are pitching their prices at 50% higher than what he values. In other words, how would people ever get access to land if the constitution were not to be amended in this blanket method? Thank you, Chair.
Prof.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Oh. There are views that the prices have been increased, but the reason for that is if you tie it to willing buyer, willing seller, you may have that kind of difficulty. It's critical to remember that the willing buyer, willing seller concept is not contained in the Constitution. So Section 25(3) specifically mentions just and equitable. That would then mean that if you start the negotiations with market value, you can always bring it down. What we say is we need not even start there. Willing buyer, willing seller should not be the point of departure.
Follow-up, Chair?
Yeah.
The Constitution would never be so detailed as to talk about willing buyer, willing seller. That was a consequential, a necessary administrative process. That's the way it went. And it sought to balance things so that nobody feels that their land is being taken away from them, contrary to Section 25(1). So we should not be criticizing that process. It was an administrative process. And now we seem to be reducing a very critical social issue here to an administrative one. Your response?
My response would be there is also the Property Valuation Act that has already commenced, which specifically provides for how you approach market value in the acquisition of land for land reform purposes. So willing buyer, willing seller and market value may be valid in relation to private transactions between parties, but not in the case when you have land reform purposes, especially where the government is involved. So we already have an act that is there on the statute books that would be able to help, and in fact should be able to help. If you link that also with the Office of the Value General and a perfect alignment between the Property Valuation Act, the property clause as it is existing today, as well as the Office of the Value General, you would not have these difficulties in practice, sir.
On our resort.
Could you clarify in your submission where you make the proposition that expropriation without compensation is in principle possible in terms of Section 25(3) at the moment? Would you clarify that?
And so depending on the specific context and the specific circumstances surrounding the particular property, it may be just and equitable insert in that particular case to award next to nothing or next to zero compensation. That is basically what we mean, that it, in a specific context, zero compensation may be just and equitable under the present constitution.
Thank you, Chair. Just quickly, you see, that's the problem, exactly. The point is, there is no legal certainty. So if you are aggrieved, you'll go to a higher court and you eventually go to the Constitutional Court, and that's another 12 months down the line. So what is your point if we create legal certainty on that issue, where it's just and equitable to expropriate without compensation?
Specifically referring to expropriation of land in the public interest with zero compensation. I'm asking to clarify the question a bit.
Exactly what you have said, yes. You have said that in terms of the existing 25, section 25, it is possible. But you say it is possible. It might be challenged. There's other views that say it's not possible because it's never been challenged. It's never been to the Constitutional Court. There's no framework in terms of that. So what I'm asking, is it not time for us to create the legal certainty?
Right. Prof.
I mean, if I can just respond, if I'm understanding the question correctly, just because we haven't had a test case in this particular context, and I think that was what Professor Slade was alluding to, is if we have a particular case and we have a particular context within which one can envisage that, at the moment we have the framework of Section 25(3) of the Constitution that provides for various factors that can be taken into account, of which market value is but one factor to take into account. And yes, there is some uncertainty about whether market value should, in fact, be the starting point in such an inquiry. But I think it is important to recognize that it is possible given the other factors. I mean, if you look at the use of the property, the history of acquisition, they may all point to, in a specific instance, a case where you have compensation far below market value. And whether we then have a practice of the state giving full market value or courts generally tending towards market value, I think is a different issue. We are trying to make the argument that it should be possible within the current framework under Section 25 for that to actually exist. Below market value, if not close to zero market value, depending on the particular case.
I think what Honorable Kuranov is trying to get at from you is the necessity for legal certainty, that given your contention in 25(3), is there sufficient legal certainty?
But I think it would be for the, if I may say, for the legislature to give more detailed guidelines in legislation and policy, and that can be tested by a court against the constitutional provisions. And if the legislature has legislation and policy in place, and the court can test whether or not that complies with the framework in the Constitution, and the court determine it is, then nothing stops the state from implementing a program, a land reform program, where compensation can, in land reform cases, be way less market value.
Honourable Sultana.
Thank you, sir. So am I interpreting you correctly and accurately when you keep on referring to test cases and courts and so on? Am I interpreting you correctly to be that you are saying the millions of South Africans who are landless should have access to land via courts through a protracted legislation instead of a simple clause in the Constitution that allows for land access through expropriation? Because you keep referring to courts and testing and what have you, and we're talking about millions of people who are landless and have been for centuries. Is that where you want to send this country to?
Mr. Chair, can I respond?
Yeah.
So I think a distinction should be drawn between the authority to expropriate, which exists. The state has the power to expropriate the land for whatever reason. In legislation, we have listed in our submission specific legislation that allows for the expropriation of land for land reform purposes. That is one decision. And the validity of the expropriation doesn't depend on the compensation that is offered afterwards. That's a different argument.
So if I could just add to that, if we amend Section 25 to provide for expropriation without compensation, it is one small aspect of the whole land reform spectrum that we will be dealing with. The bigger dimension of land reform also relates to difficulties in conceptualization, difficulties in legislation and implementation, governance, in other words, not only legal issues. So there is a magnitude of difficulties and problems inherent in the land reform program. By changing this one aspect, we will not address the underlying land reform issues.
Thank you very much to the Department of Public Law, Stellenbosch.
Mr. Chair, can I just correct you? It's the Faculty of Law.
Oh, okay. Oh, Faculty of Law. All right. Thank you very much for coming and presenting on oral presentation from your submission. We then going to take the next submitters, Puhlisani, NPC. And we are told it's Dr. Richard, can't pronounce the surname.
Duseche.
Duseche. Was it?
Duseche.
Duseche.
Yeah.
Or Duseche.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you very much for this opportunity to address you this afternoon. A little bit about Puhlisani, just so many of you may not have heard of Puhlisani before. We have a non-profit company. We have many years' experience of working in different land reform settings, and we are focused, our mission is to have a refocused and effective pro-poor land reform program. I'd like to reflect on the conversation that we've been having over the public hearings and here today. A starting point. We say we're talking about land, and in my presentation I put land in inverted commas because I don't believe that we're just talking simply about land. We're talking about the deeply rooted inequalities which characterize our society, and land remains a potent metaphor for dispossession, a signifier that South Africa does not yet belong to all who live in it. So if we're going to deal with the land question, we have to deal with it within this context. But at the same time, we have to ask ourselves whether constitutional amendment is the route to go, or whether we must understand and address the systemic problems contributing to the poor performance of the land reform program to date. So our position on expropriation without compensation. Legal opinion confirms that the Constitution places no impediment in the way of land expropriation and is flexible with regard to the calculation of compensation so long as it is just and equitable. Given this formulation and the preceding presentation attests to this, the formulation for compensation could range from zero to full market value depending on the circumstances of the case. So why are we sitting in this room asking these questions? It's primarily because in practice, the analysis of the factors to be weighed up in the calculation of just and equitable compensation remain insufficiently developed or understood. There are a whole range of existing laws which have been referred to already. The Provision of Land Assistance Act, the Restitution Act, ESTA, ILPILRA, they all have reference to expropriation. But these provisions remain untested and unimplemented. And why is this? This is because cases have not been brought before the courts to set precedents which could provide a baseline for the development of transparent policy and procedures. The principal obstacle, in our view, preventing equitable access to land does not lie with the Constitution. It is a reflection of a general lack of political will to implement an effective pro-poor land reform program and a failure to pass an updated Expropriation Act. We further submit that there's no evidence to demonstrate that expropriation will make land reform cheaper or faster. To the contrary, expropriation may slow down the pace and increase the costs of land as a consequence of a drawn-out and expensive litigation. So, in our view, the current inquiry into the need to amend the Constitution diverts us from the need to confront the widely acknowledged policy and program failures of land reform. And we regard this as deeply unfortunate, given that the challenges facing the land reform program have been analyzed in great detail and with exhaustive public input by the high-level panel. Despite the volume of evidence and the concrete proposals presented, the HLP report seems to have been overshadowed by the expropriation debate, which in our view offers no sustainable solutions to the complex problems which were addressed by the panel. I'd like to draw our attention to some of the unintended consequences that may also go with expropriation without compensation. It's critically important to recognize that alongside the registered owner, there are often others with unregistered rights in the land, which may be subject to expropriation. So we need to think carefully about farm dwellers, communal land rights holders, informal settlement dwellers, whose rights may be diminished through unthought-out expropriation processes. We've already seen examples of land acquisition under PLAS, which has extinguished the rights of farm workers living on that land and rendered them without a place. So, in our view, we have failed to realize the transformative power of Section 25. And in our view, these rights will not be amplified by amending the Constitution. Section 25 can only have a transformative effect if South Africans take a long, hard, and honest look at the multiple factors resulting in the poor performance of the land reform program. I'm going to take you briefly through rural and urban land and then return to tenure security. If we look at the land reform status quo, we have acquired 4.7 million hectares through redistribution and 3.4 million through restitution, totaling 8.13 million hectares. Official estimates suggest that over 400,000 households have benefited from land reform. However, recent research, Michael Alibert of 2018, suggests that since the acquisition of this land, there has been a massive shrinkage in the number of beneficiaries who retain a claim to the land. Those who retain active links with land purchased through redistribution and restitution may have shrunk to just 60,000 households. If we look at the cost per estimated actual beneficiary, these have mounted significantly. A significant portion of the land acquired through land reform has been transferred to landholding entities. By 2010, there were more than 1,300 trusts which had been established to hold land, and according to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform CPA register, there were more than 1,500 registered CPAs in 2017. Together, these entities have a property portfolio worth billions, yet 82% of CPAs were not compliant with the Act, and many trusts have collapsed. The problems faced by landholding entities reflect state failure to adequately support and resource them. This has meant that for the membership in the vast majority of these CPIs, there is insufficient clarity on land rights and no system to record and certify household and family rights and legally recognize social tenures. Consequently, there has been a reluctance to invest in the land. Land tenure issues remain badly neglected. Currently, just 3.7% of the land reform budget, itself only 0.4% of the national budget, is spent on land tenure and administration. Some 17 million South Africans in former homelands lack security of tenure. There is no legislation to protect their rights, other than the Interim Protection of Informal Land Rights Act, which remains largely unenforced. Ongoing contestation over the role of chiefs in land administration has created spaces for land grabbing and elite capture. Farm workers and dwellers live on land owned by others. They have insecure tenure and no pathways to secure property. Section 4 of ESTA remains unimplemented. Serious questions must be asked in this context about the value of the return on public money invested in land reform to date. Its contribution in its current form to poverty reduction, securing rural livelihoods, and rectifying spatial inequality are negligible. Expropriation without compensation offers no real answers here. We have to systematically address and overcome the problems which I have outlined. With regard to urban land, we have provided 2.5 million households and 1.2 million service sites. But the housing backlog nevertheless increased, while the number of informal settlements has also climbed. To date, state investment in RDP housing has fueled the extension of an inefficient urban sprawl that pushes the urban poor to the periphery. In identifying well-located land for housing, we need to learn from the experience of recent developments, for example, the N2 Gateway in Lange, to examine how access to land and housing are often shadowed by conflict. Securing well-located land is not enough. Managing the social process, having transparent rights recordal and allocation are also key. The last part of the Constitutional Review Committee's mandate, which I have not heard anything about today, is about securing rights. I quote, "The Constitutional Review Committee has also invited inputs to propose the necessary constitutional amendments, where applicable, with regards to the kind of future land tenure regime needed." At the moment, we can have no secure rights without wide-ranging, all-inclusive land recordal and administration. The failure to build a land administration system to secure and manage the rights guaranteed by the Constitution and existing tenure laws has rendered the property rights of 60% of South Africans vulnerable. There's an urgent need to change how land tenure and land administration are conceptualized in policy and law.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doc. Any clarity seeking question? Honorable Fultan, just do the right thing, yeah? And clarity seeking questions.
Okay.
Honourable Mlaudzi, you'll follow.
For me, Chair, clarity is about making sure that what I see as a loaded statement, I must get to know what it is that has loaded that statement. That's where clarity is not about simple, straightforward interpretation. So accordingly, I'm looking at page 8, the last sentence of the first paragraph, as well as the third paragraph and the fourth paragraph. Where there's a lot of criticism on how the current government is not being successful in implementing land reform programs. Now, my question is, with all this, would you otherwise, if we had a government that had a successful land reform program, would you have suggested the amendment of Section 25? That's where the loading is. Because you seem to base your argument on the failure of the current government, and yet this debate is not about evaluating the current government. Thank you.
If I may respond, I think what I've been trying to submit is that, in my humble opinion, I think we're asking the wrong question. I don't think the success of land reform or addressing land inequality is going to be solved by amending the Constitution. In my view, the Constitution has sufficient transformative power to do that already. What we lack is the political will, the investment in budget, capacity, systems to make land reform work. And until we do that, we can amend the Constitution. You can have a Constitution that enables expropriation without compensation, but it will not secure the rights of the poor.
Honourable Mlaudzi.
Thank you, Chairperson. In your presentation, this one doesn't have a pages, but I'm a little bit worried about the statistic of the household benefit. You said official estimate suggested more than 400 households benefited from the land reform and 130,000 household benefited in redistribution.
It's a little louder on the mic.
Okay, thank you. So I want to know, did you ever make a research out of this 400,000 you said up to now from 1994, what are the balance of the people, poor people, who are not benefiting, which is forcing this parliament to amend the constitution because of the slow pace of benefiting our poor people. Like you said, since 1994, only 400 households out of more than 50, maybe let's say 30 people who are poor, who doesn't have any place to stay, people who are burying each other on top of each other because they don't have sufficient land. So why don't on your estimate also give us the stats of the people who are still outside of benefiting through the land reform? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think that's an excellent question, and I think the high-level panel tried to address that in some detail. It looked at research that had been conducted in South Africa about land demand and landlessness. And clearly there is a significant demand for land. But increasingly that land seems to be urban rather than rural. And it's a need for well-located land in urban areas. What I didn't have time to deal with in the presentation was the research done by Turok, which I cited, about the tax that is effectively levied on the poor who live on the urban periphery. So it's not just about land anywhere, it's about land that enables people to have easy access to jobs, that cuts their transport costs. These, in my view, are the key priorities that we need to be dealing with. The research in South Africa suggests primarily that people want small portions of land. The failure to address the Subdivision of Land Act, which was has never been promulgated, to allow smaller pieces of land to be identified and cut up and distributed is also a major problem which is impeding the progress of land reform.
Right, it will be Honorable Kata, Honorable Obama, and Honorable Mukwili. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in your conclusion, I see you make mention there that you say the current narrow focus actually diverts us from finding the solutions to the complex problems. One of the previous questions, you were also talking about the political will investment. Can you just maybe just clarify, what do you mean when you say, you know, the narrow focus? Are we talking there specifically about just the constitutional amendment of Section 25? And then what would you say would be the solution to these complex
right.
problems?
Thank you for that. I mean, you will probably gather from my presentation a sense of frustration with this process. And this is primarily because I've worked in the land sector since 1970. And I have been around the block a little bit in these processes. I have seen a lot of public money, a lot of public energy being invested into the land question and trying to resolve it. And in my view, the HLP process was the most thoroughgoing analysis we have had of land problems in South Africa ever. It is the most comprehensive. It provides detailed recommendations. It has draft legislation. It requires members of parliament and citizens of South Africa to engage with it, to think carefully about what this could entail, and if we implement those recommendations, how we might be able to turn the corner. My concern is that the conversation about expropriation without compensation is a simplification of a whole set of complex issues. It's a narrative. It's around enlarging a political space. It's around tapping into the deep and totally justified anger at continuing inequality, which is so stark and disgusting in South Africa. We need to change that. But in my view, like a narrow focus on expropriation without compensation may exacerbate that rather than deal with the root causes that we need to address.
Honourable Obama.
Thank you, Chair. In the second last page of your presentation, you talk about, or you hint at, people who already face de facto expropriation without compensation. Now, I'd like you just to explain who those people are at the moment, or who you think they are. And also, you seem to talk about a recordal system, recorded and administration. Could you just expand on that, please?
Thank you. People are being expropriated, even though we don't use the term, daily or weekly in South Africa, primarily as a consequence of mining legislation. I've been working with people in Mapela, which is in Limpopo, next to one of the biggest platinum mines in the world. And as platinum mines expand, deals get struck between the mines and usually the local traditional leader, and people's villages get removed, and they get moved to another area. People do not see the benefits of mining. Nothing comes to their pocket. the compensation that they receive is derisory when you look at what they have been dispossessed of. Further than that, there are examples where people's graves have been dug up and desecrated. No compensation is provided for that. There are numerous untold stories in the South African landscape of people who are poor, whose land rights are not secured in law, being passed over by elites, being marginalized. So the land recordal system is about rethinking property rights in South Africa. It's about moving away from a fetish with title, but recognizing what title is supposed to provide: secure, legal, transactable rights that defend your rights and enable you to transact them with somebody else. The World Bank has found that processes which have focused on titling have proved to be an expensive failure, trying to extend title as it stands. If you look at RDP houses, more than 50% of people who have an RDP house do not have a title deed. And for many of those who do, the title deed no longer reflects who the original owner is because of informal transactions. People cannot afford the current system. It's designed for an elite. We need to design a system that works for all South Africans, not just the few. And that's what the proposals around land recordal entail. And these, again, are detailed at some length in the HLP report.
Honourable Mutapo, you will follow.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know whether I'm having the correct slide presentation. There is a sentence in... Is this presentation, eh? Yeah, it's page where you say our position on expropriation without compensation. There is a bulletin there that speaks about it is a reflection general, what, if you can see it. Beneath it is a sentence that says there is no evidence to demonstrate that EWOC will make land reform cheaper or make it faster. Can you elaborate more on that? What do you mean by that?
Sure. I think the dominant narrative at the moment is if we introduce expropriation without compensation, somehow we're going to speed up access to land, and even if we amend the constitution. But I think the presentation from Stellenbosch Law Faculty has highlighted that this is like a thoroughgoing process that's going to be required. It requires a whole overhaul of the constitution, and that is going to be subject to litigation. People are going to litigate. And if I'm an owner of a property and I am expropriated, I'm going to try to contest that. You know, like as I suspect you would too if you were in that position. You're not going to sit down and let people take away your property without a fight. So I think the view is, and if you look at the international experience about expropriation, it's one of the most heavily litigated areas, with really long and deeply expensive court cases that go on for ages. So in our view, the unintended consequence is that the process gets spun out, it gets adversarial. We end up with paying expensive lawyers to defend the case. And the cost of land, if you factor in the cost of the legal fees, actually goes way above what you could have acquired the land for at below market compensation. And I'd also like to just add one other thing, if I may. There seems to be an assumption that compensation has to be paid in cash. There's nowhere in the Constitution, to my reading of the Constitution, that says that this is required. People could be compensated with government bonds, for example. So there are other options that we could be exploring here.
What do you mean by government bonds? Can you explain what is government bond?
Basically, in the government bond scenario, like I don't pay you cash today, but you get an investment in a government-guaranteed investment fund that pays you out maybe in 20 years' time or pays you out in a sequenced manner.
Do you agree that the land must be treated as a commodity?
I don't think I understand that question. It's clear land in South Africa is not just a commodity. Certain people view land as a commodity, but for the majority of South Africans, land, if you see the quote that I put in from Nomboniso Gaza, it's not about agriculture, it's not about this land that's described in the deeds office. It's about your graves, it's about your history, it's about your dignity, it's about all the things that you've been speaking about. So we can't commodify that, and I think this is part of the problem that we have in dealing with the land issue, that very often South Africans are talking past each other. One sees land as a commodity, a property which changes hands on the markets. Others see land as something which makes them who they are and provides their continuity historically. And we have to find ways to bridge these two different, very different viewpoints.
All right. Thank you. Honorable Mutapo?
I'll raise my points in committee. Thank you.
You'll raise your point? Oh, in committee. Thank you very much. We want to welcome and recognize now, Mr. the colleagues, honorable members from the Canadian Parliament that are with us in the House, just observing and listening. Thank you. You're welcome. I think that concludes then any clarity seeking questions and your input to your submission. Thank you very much for making it, and we certainly have listened, and as we heard, we've engaged. The next presenter would be Plus, Prof. Ruth Hall. You here, Prof?
Yes.
We were with you at the colloquium. All right? Okay.
Nice to see you again.
Good.
I'm just wondering where I can put my presentation. I did email it through, but I can also put it onto the
projector. Do you have a projector? Do we have a projector?
No, I was trying, so I couldn't get it.
Are we ready with this projector?
ready, if you're ready.
Chairperson, many thanks for this opportunity. And to all the members of the committee, thank you very much. It's a great honor and a pleasure to be here today. My name is Ruth Hall. I represent the Institute for Poverty, Land and Agrarian Studies, PLAS, at the University of Western Cape. You will agree, I'm sure, that our name is very appropriate to this discussion. We have made a written submission. And in our written submission, we have set out, as we understand it, the track record of land reform. And if we were to look over the past 24 years, I think that we can all agree that the track record of land reform has been very, very disappointing. And that this is not the fault of the Constitution. This has been a massive political failure. At the same time, I would like to clarify that PLAS, as an institute, is an independent institution. We do independent research. We train people. We train civil servants. We do field-based research, and we provide independent policy advice. We would also like to emphasize that our view is that while this has been a very important few months in the history of our country, where we are finally grappling with the land question, essentially, the process of having public hearings has asked the wrong questions to the wrong people. Instead of asking government, why have you not used the Constitution, we have been asking ordinary people, should the Constitution be changed? And so I would like to present to you our view of what we think can and should be done in this deeply racially polarized political debate. So expropriation without compensation, does it require amendment? In the mid-1990s, if we look at Section 25, this constitutional provision was forged on the basis of the ANC specifically saying that there should be a property clause, but that it should be a mandate for transformation. The Section 25 was never about providing blanket protection for private property rights. It was always about providing a clear mandate for transformation. There can be expropriation in terms of a law of general application. Compensation must be just and equitable, taking into account five criteria, and we understand that the nation's commitment to land reform is paramount. There is a clear mandate for land redistribution, for tenure reform, and for restitution. And what we often overlook is Section 25(8). 25(8) is an override clause which says no measure, no provision of the section can impede the state from taking legislative and other measures to embark on land and other related reforms in accordance with provisions of Section 36. So in fact, what we have is a very strong constitutional mandate which actually not only empowers but obliges the state to embark on land reform. So what problem are we trying to solve here? We are clear that the Bill of Rights mandates land expropriation in the interests of land reform. It doesn't require market-related compensation. Any compensation should be just and equitable, and any expropriation is to be addressed on a case-by-case basis. But what has been the problem? Expropriation has not been used to break deadlocks, and this means that in practice, where there are communities who are claiming back their properties, for instance through restitution, and individual owners refuse to part with their property on the terms that government offers, in fact, the interests of owners trump the interests of the dispossessed. And this is contrary to what our Constitution mandates. Our Constitution actually mandates that where there is a conflict directly between the owners of property and the dispossessed, that the imperative of transformation should take priority. And this is not what has happened. So the problem is not the Constitution. The problem has been the failure to use the Constitution effectively. Let's look at four different scenarios that we can look at to the future. Scenario one is state custodianship of all land. We could vest custodianship of all state of all land in the state, and this would be a deprivation of property rights in terms of a law of general application. That would be in line with Section 25(1). In fact, if you look at the minerals case, the Agri-South Africa case, we will see that, in fact, a deprivation in terms of a law of of general application is not contrary to the Constitution. So, in fact, we could vest all land in the state without changing the Constitution. This is clearly the policy prescriptions that have been promoted by the economic freedom fighters as expressed in their FAQs. But it is not ANC policy. It doesn't address the question of how to redistribute the land. It's rather about the powers of the state. So it's unclear what problem is going to be solved. If we were to do this, no constitutional amendment is required. A second scenario is that we have expropriation without compensation in all cases. This would mean treating the poor in the same way that we treat the rich. It would mean those people in Kolobeni, in the Wild Coast, who are struggling to retain access and ownership of their land, would be treated in the same way as a rich person. It would mean treating black and rich and poor in the same way. To do this would require a massive constitutional amendment. It would mean removing the provisions that expropriation should be subject to compensation in Section 25(2)(b). It would require changing the just and equitable provisions from Section 25(3). And possibly also it would require us changing the provision that there should be no arbitrary deprivation under Section 25(1). It's difficult to see how this could pass constitutional muster. Certainly it would violate Sections 1 and 36 of the Constitution, including the Limitations Clause, and would therefore require 75% of the National Assembly to vote in favor of it. A third option is let's look at expropriation of land without compensation in some cases. Now, the requirement of just and equitable compensation in the Constitution has never been tested in the courts. And the closest we came was the Malamala case. Constitutional experts argue that, in fact, the state could pay zero compensation as long as it is just and equitable to do so, but that would have to be on a case-by-case basis. If we were to go with this, then it would need an amended expropriation bill to come back to Parliament. It would need clear policy regulations and some test cases to clarify what is the compensation regime, ranging from zero compensation in some cases, partial compensation in others, market-related compensation in other cases, and perhaps even in some cases for those who are poor and desperate, perhaps above market compensation. So we need to have clarity about a new compensation regime. To do this, no constitutional amendment is required. A fourth option, and this is where listening to the political arguments that have been happening in the past few months, it seems that some members of this committee are inclined towards, is to say, let's do expropriation without compensation in some cases, but let's actually just amend the Constitution to clarify and to confirm that zero compensation can be paid in certain circumstances. So scenario four is a clarificatory amendment for political purposes. There could be expropriation with or without compensation or with partial compensation on a case-by-case basis. Every case will have to be argued. It could be possible to amend Section 25 of the Constitution to clarify, for instance, in the override clause, Section 25(8), to clarify that the requirement of compensation should not impede the state. It could, for instance, be possible to add the words, merely the words, including compensation, to Section 25(8). This doesn't actually resolve any practical problem at all, but it does perhaps resolve a political problem, and it sends out a political signal, which is that the state and the ruling party are not going to be held back by the requirement of compensation in order to advance land reform. So let's be clear. We have a number of options. We have state custodianship, which does not require constitutional amendment, but is also contrary to the policy of the ruling party. Secondly, we have expropriation without compensation in all cases, which would require a far-reaching amendment to the Constitution, requiring a three-quarters majority in Parliament. Thirdly, we have expropriation without compensation in some cases and with compensation in others, which is what is already provided for in Section 25. That would require no amendment. A fourth option is expropriation in some cases, while providing a clarificatory amendment within the Constitution. So our view is that there is no need to change the Constitution in terms of the law, but politically it seems that we as a society have opened up this debate. There has been a deeply racialized and polarized discussion within society and within all the hearings that you have held as a committee. And that our view is that either we should be going for option three, which is expropriation without compensation in some cases, and develop jurisprudence around this, or, if need be, politically, a clarificatory amendment to Section 25, which would clarify that where reasonable and where just and equitable, no compensation can be paid. What would
Thank
be the good side? I will just leave it at this and say that there would be a great advantage in expediting the expropriation bill, moving towards other records, a land records bill, a redistribution bill, a test cases, rapid urban land release, and strong political leadership and fixing institutions. Thank you so much.
Members, I would like to ask Reverend Mishwe to change seats to and come to the sides of the presenters, because I'm informed that he's not participating but is presenting as a submitter. All right, let's take questions of clarity. Honorable Carter and Honorable Swartz, Honorable Korenoff, Honorable Mahile, Honorable Mukwili, Honorable Bumloa. That order.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Fultana and Honorable Mulauts, the long list.
Thank you, Chair. Prof, just a quick question. I look at the four solutions that could possibly be there. But if we do go with solution number three, do you think that there's any way that Pandora's box can be closed? You're talking about this racially divided public hearings we've been having. Do you think that whatever we do can actually bring a solution to Pandora's box? Is there a way to close it?
Yes, Prof. Or you want to take all of them? All right. If you're short, just take one by one, if you're short.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Well, I think that it's very clear that we have not used the Constitution. So the irony here is that the ANC in the mid-1990s, and I was here in this building when the Constitution was being negotiated, and people were fighting to provide these provisions to say that there must be a transformatory vision of land reform in the property clause. And we have not used those provisions. I do not see this as Pandora's box. Section 25 clearly mandates and obliges the state to embark on land reforms and empowers the state to expropriate where appropriate while providing just and equitable compensation on a case-by-case basis. And I agree that one of the big concerns that many people in this room share is that we're going to be held up in court. And so I think that the key issues, if we want to really clarify how we can use expropriation without compensation, without having our hands tied, in order to expedite the process, would be surely we need to have good test cases. We need to have jurisprudence that backs this up. We need to have policy clarity, so that in the future, not every case will be contested in court. There will be clarity and certainty, and people will know that you cannot expect to be paid out market price. Thank you.
Honourable Swartz.
Thank you for the submission. Good to see you again. The proposal that you make about the draft redistribution bill, which seems eminently reasonable, and that is also contained in the higher-level panel report. You weren't able to comment on that. Would you just comment on that? And then, as we know, the expropriation bill has now been returned, or it's been withdrawn, and you made some comments about that. Now, that would clearly set out the nuts and bolts of a proposal, the expropriation bill, on probably your number four proposal, option four, or possibly three and four. Surely that's the route to go, to look at that, look at the distribution bill, take cases to the Constitutional Court, and test the present provisions as it is presently worded, look at that legislation, because that's going to be where the nuts and bolts are. Thank you.
But it's not surely the way to go, Swart.
Sorry.
It's your view, that one.
That is surely the way to go.
Please comment on
that proposal which you make in your documents.
Yeah. All right, Prof.
Thank you so much. It's always lovely when you get an opportunity to give the rest of the presentation. So, you know, one option is let's think about amending and passing the expropriation bill. I think that it's a very positive move that the Department of Public Works has now withdrawn this bill. And what it means is that we can overcome the constraints of the Expropriation Act of 1975. We can provide for expropriation in the public interest and with just and equitable compensation, not market price. And we could actually develop a spectrum of compensation ranging from zero to partial to market to above market compensation, depending on the circumstances, right? And I think that there are great potentials there. But expropriation is about the state's power. And I think that what we've heard across these hearings around the country is that people are less interested in the state's power. They're more interested in citizens' power. And so the expropriation, the redistribution bill is precisely about strengthening the hand of citizens to hold the state to account. And so the idea of a new redistribution bill is to operationalize and define what constitutes equitable access to land, to set out beneficiary criteria, who should get access to land, to determine how it should happen, and so on. So I think that the expropriation bill and the redistribution bill are a perfect pair that can actually strengthen both the powers of the state and clarify the powers of the state, but also confirm and clarify the powers of citizens to hold the state to account. And these are crucial elements in strengthening the land reform process. And I think that what you've all seen as a committee is the enormous impatience of South Africans with this process. So clearly we need to move forward. Thank you.
Honourable Goronoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just quickly, Professor, you quite correctly said that we're going to need a set of case law to get to, you know, what is compensation or fair compensation. Is it possible, if we change the constitution, that we can fast track that position, or is it not possible? Do you understand what I'm trying to say? Okay, let me try to rephrase it. I say if we look at your scenario three and we change the constitution, will it speed up the process, yes or no?
Option three.
Honourable members, you know, our understanding of expropriation is firstly, the state expropriates on a regular basis, right? This is normal. The state expropriates for public purposes all the time. So, in fact, the state is quite adept at expropriating, but we haven't tried expropriation for land reform purposes. So, our understanding is that what would be quite likely is that initially an expropriation-driven land reform will likely slow down the process initially, but over time it could speed up. It could speed up. Bear in mind that only about 0.4% of the national budget is set aside for land reform. So we have a very limited budget, and that budget is limited not only in terms of acquiring land, but also in terms of having the qualified, skilled, capable civil servants to implement such a program. So we clearly need to rethink budgets as well. So my view is that we do need to rethink the whole process and that simply changing the constitution by itself is not going to be an answer, because of course the government could have been expropriating property for the past 22 years and has chosen not to do so. So changing the constitution by itself is not going to change anything. The question is, how will the state use those powers? And will it use it in a strategic fashion that will provide clarity, provide certainty, dedicate budgets, build skilled institutions and capable institutions in order to expedite land reform? None of that can be resolved through constitutional amendment. But regardless of what happens with the constitution, those are the challenges. Thank you.
Well, really?
No, thanks, Chair. My submission to the Prof about the EFF. Thank you, Prof, for your thing. But I just want to make clear to you that as the EFF, we said, and we are still saying, that all land must be expropriated without compensation, and that the state should be the custodian of this land. That is our position. And I'm appealing to Prof to go and read our FAQ properly and not misrepresent facts. That is my submission, Chair. Secondly, I would like to say to Prof that she's saying the government was just reluctant to act on the land redistribution or to make sure that expropriation happens. But I think Prof knows very well that the state was unable, with its willing buyer, willing seller policy, to expropriate land, because the manner in which the market and the value of the land was too high to make it impossible for the state to buy that property. She knows very well. I think in her research, she will see that that policy failed. And if we continue to refer failed policies and failed systems of expropriating land without compensation, we're going to have a very serious problem. So the only way
you'll debate with us, Honorable Mukwila, when we debate that part of the latter comments you're making. Honorable Mlauz.
Thanks, Chairperson. I saw you proposed some solutions in order to assist on this issue of land. For example, you said we must amend and pass the bill about the expropriation. So these processes, don't you think that it will be a long process again and delay the issue of land expropriation? Because now we are 24 years in democracy. These so many policies frustrated the first process in order to expropriate the land. And you are saying that we must amend, must push the bill back, as the bill was pushed by President from the NCOP back to the Parliament. The Parliament must send the bill back to the Department of Public Works. Don't you think that it is going to take a long process? Because you saw on the public consultation the hunger of land to our people. Thank you.
Prof?
Thank you so much for those two questions, both from the EFF. I have read the frequently asked questions document from the EFF. The crucial thing that I could say about the willing buyer, willing seller policy is that this, and I did my PhD on this, this was a policy proposal that was promoted by the World Bank to the ANC prior to 1994, and it was adopted as policy. It has never been within the Constitution. Right? Willing buyer, willing seller has never been part of the Constitution. So the fact that the ANC has chosen to adopt this policy has been a choice over time. And my view is that the ANC has now changed that policy position. In terms of the delay, I think that we can agree that that any kind of case-by-case expropriation is going to be contested in court, at least in the initial phase. The question is, should we have just and equitable compensation, or should it not be just and equitable? Bearing in mind that we have to have law that applies to all South Africans. unless we are to override sections 1 and 36 of the Constitution, and we are to not have equitable laws that apply to all South Africans. So I think that those are crucial questions. I want to hand over to my colleague, Ben Cousins, who wants to add something brief.
Thank you, Jen. Professor Ben Cousins, colleague of Ruth's here. The notion that what's impeded land reform to date is the Constitution implies a cause and effect relationship. The notion that changing the Constitution will lead to overcoming all the problems of land reform implies a certain notion of cause and effect. In both those instances, the arguments are wrong. They're not borne out by any of the evidence. The reasons why land reform is so slow and so ineffective have got nothing to do with the Constitution. They've got everything to do with political will, with budget, with state capacity. The notion that changing the Constitution will lead to speeding up land reform on a large scale for poor black South Africans is also illogical. As we've all noted here today, taking test cases to the Constitutional Court will slow land reform down, at least in the initial stages. The real solutions to land reform are to do with fixing the practical problems of implementing this program and applying political will to do it. Just to think about the options in front of us. What is the Pandora's box? The Pandora's box, if you take that to be the massive uncertainty besetting our society at the present time, the worries that investors have, the worries that ordinary black South Africans have about expropriation. The Pandora's box is maybe uncertainty, lack of clarity. I want to draw its attention to option number four. Number four, a clarificatory amendment. If we agree that the Constitution at the moment does allow for just and equitable compensation, which in some cases will mean zero compensation, what is the harm in inserting a clause into Section 25(8) along the lines of including compensation? This will do no more than clarify for our society and for the international community that we are serious about land reform, that we want to do it within the rule of law, and that we enjoin government to do it effectively. I want to suggest that for the different parties within the Constitutional Review Committee, consideration be given to coming together to unanimously agree that a minor clarification is introduced and that we proceed to do land reform seriously at last. I think this will send out a message to everyone in our society and to the world at large that we need to do this, we want to do this, and we are going to do it.
Thanks, Rolf. I'm going to conclude with Myra and taking three more, and then we're going to take Mpumlwana, Bredenbach, and Maile. I'm closing with Maile. Yeah. Okay. This is the order. Mpumlwana, Maile, Bredenbach, Sultana. Yeah, we're working on, remember there's a time set, right? So we'll see how if you be on time, we're not going to take you on Honourable Queen because you are very guessing it might. All right, let's move that order. Pumlwana Maile, Bredenbach.
Thank you. I wanted to... just a clarification on the first thing that you said. If the government takes over the land, there is no need to change the constitution. If the proposal will be to nationalize the land, as you may call it that way, all land in the country. And you said there will be no need to change the constitution. And yet the constitution, section 25, specifically talks about
nobody should be deprived of the land without compensation. Now you say there is no need to change the constitution, and yet if the land, the country, the government takes over the land, just clarification on that point. You still say, you say there's no need to change, and yet how do you then say you will be able to take the land without changing the constitution? Thank you.
Chair, thanks so much. Thank you for the question. So just to go back to scenario one, one perspective that has been promoted within South Africa is that there should be state custodianship of all land. In other words, we're not going to expropriate on a case-by-case basis, but all land at the stroke of a pen should be expropriated without compensation and vested in the state. Okay. Now, we have two precursors to this experience, and the one is the minerals, the Minerals and Petroleum Resources Development Act, the MPRDA. The other is the water. We have actually nationalized and put under state custodianship both minerals and water in this country. And we did not do so by amending the Constitution. For in fact, the removal of minerals and water rights from private ownership to the state has been done through a law of general application. It was not discriminatory. It was not arbitrary deprivation of property. And so, in fact, in both cases, this has been allowed within the scope of our property clause. So what I was pointing to is that even in order to vest state custodianship of all land would not require amending the Constitution. But what I was also pointing to is that actually the political parties, the major political parties in this country, are deeply disagreed on this question. And that, in fact, the ruling party clearly is not in favor of state custodianship of all land. There's very clear policy provisions that say, if you look at the ANC's resolution from December, very clearly that the ANC approves of a system of land ownership that combines state ownership, private ownership, cooperative ownership, and other forms of ownership, rather than state custodianship of all land. So I think that what we're trying to say is that even to vest land, all land in the state, would not require changing the constitution, but it is contrary to the policy position of the majority party at present. Thanks.
Maile.
No, thanks, Chair. And thanks, Prof. I'm interested in your scenario two, which talks about expropriation without compensation in all cases. And by in all cases, you say that the poor and the rich will be treated in the same way. Now, here's where I want you to clarify me. By the poor, I expect you are talking about the African and who are the majority in this country and who are owning a minor piece of what we call the land. And by the rich, you refer to predominantly the white and who are in minority. Now, what I want to understand, if you say we treat them in the same way, what is the security of tenure of the poor vis-a-vis the rich? And then, are we talking urban or rural land? And if we talk about the poor, I talked about security of tenure. If we compare the poor and the rich, in term, if we were to talk about concentration of people in square kilometers, what could be a distribution of land in terms of square kilometers between the rich and the poor, so that we can treat them equally or the same? I don't know if that makes sense, but you'll just have to bear with me. Thanks, Jay.
Prof, if you are able to point us to the question, otherwise I feel it's too broad a question than the subject matter that is before us. Have you understood what the member wants clarity on?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I will respond very briefly. I think that the core question here is, should people be treated in the same way? And the Constitution as it stands says that people should not be treated in the same way. We should be just and equitable. In other words, we should take into account history. We should take into account how people acquired land. We should take into account who they are and how they use that land now. So in fact, our Constitution explicitly says that we should not treat people the same, because we are not all the same. We don't come from the same place. We should not treat urban and rural, rich and poor, black and white. We should not treat everyone the same. And that's why I am critical of scenario two, because we should surely not treat everybody in the same way, given that we come from such different histories. So for instance, and I want to give you a very concrete example, we have seen in the past couple of weeks farms in Limpopo being earmarked for expropriation. At the same time, there's a community in Kolobeni in the Eastern Cape. They are not wanting to be expropriated without compensation. In fact, they don't want to be expropriated at all. So how can we deal with different scenarios like that in different ways? Surely we need to be able to deal with them in a differentiated way to deal with our history of inequality. Thank you.
Honorable Breinbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Professor, the fact that there's only one part-time land claims court judge has obviously impeded the fact of dealing with the huge amount of land claims that are outstanding. Do you perhaps know what the reason is why the permanent members have not been appointed ever and the land claims court has been chronically understaffed? And secondly, do you know if the CEDA matter, which was overturned in the Supreme Court of Appeal, is it going to the Constitutional Court, or has nobody appealed it?
Thank you, Honourable Member. It is a shocking, shocking thing that we have a Land Claims Court. Remember that the Land Claims Court was set up precisely because in the mid-1990s there was a distrust of our judicial system to deal in an adequate way with issues of land claims. So we set up a specialised court. Now that court is meant to have at least 5 full-time judges, but it has a single half-time judge. So yes, it is chronically understaffed. And it is a massive problem. And I think that even if we were to get that resolved, we still will deal with problems which is related to the capacity within the Land Claims Commission and within the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. So clearly we have a broader set of political and institutional challenges that go far beyond merely the question of the courts. But the courts is an important issue. And I think that Advocate Tembeka Nwokatobi has very clearly argued in several public forums recently that in fact if we cannot get the Land Claims Court functioning adequately, we cannot expedite land reform. We need to invest in institutions and get these cases moving through. Thank you.
Yeah, really, it was an offside question and an offside answer. It's not bad. Phil Turner.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm finding it very interesting to deal with a whole lot of professors today who obviously come from the same school of thought. They've clubbed together and they've got similar points, just different faces and different universities. So I'll put questions like the ones which I put to the very first professor. Yeah. Trying to bog us down to a lot of legal amendments or applying the current legislation. You look at subsection 8 of section 25, which actually says there should be no impediment of the state. And you come here as a state, we're trying to create that law, and you want to oppose that. And this is a constitutional process. And yet the constitution says no law should be made no law should be made to impede what is provided for in section 25. Now, I'm also serving in the Portfolio Committee for Public Works. I know exactly how that expropriation bill came about. It was exactly because it was impossible for the state to go and expropriate. I know it provides for expropriation with compensation, but it was impossible. That's why it became necessary to pass a law of general application. Now it is being shelved. Any minute we'll go into the House to finalize that process. Now what I'm getting at, Chair, is that in this process where you say there's been no testing of this Section 25 in terms of expropriating without compensation, are you telling us that you want to tie down the need for millions of South Africans who are landless to a minute process of taking their cases one by one to courts? Is this what you mean with all this legal process that you have explained this afternoon? We must depend on a legal process, and you're talking about people who are extremely poor. We haven't got the means or even the knowledge with which court to approach in order for them to secure their God-given rights to land. And you say we must go to court case by case by case by case in order for us as Africans, the Aborigines of South Africa, to get land back. Is this what you are trying to convey to South Africa today? Thank you.
Prof, we've run out of time, so reply very short.
Okay, I'll be very brief. Firstly, I agree with everything that you said in the first part of your statement, which is absolutely Section 25(8) is an override. And the state can be doing all kinds of things. So I would ask you the question, why has the state not been using those powers for the past 22 years? Why has the state not been using those powers? And if we were to change the powers of the state, how would the state behave differently, or would it at all? So I would argue to you to respond, yes, a one-by-one case. But we need to have precedence. Surely we need to have precedence in order to expedite the process. That's my response. Thank you so much. But let's be clear about the politics, which is about the ruling party and its position and whether or not it is advancing the interests of the people that you're talking about. Thank you.
Honourable McQuill, what do you say?
Oh, you are giving me a chance to speak, Chair.
Okay, no, thank you. The time is expired. I thought you were raising a point of order or something.
Because it seems like you forgot me.
No, we've given you the opportunity, Ellen, they answered you and we allocated 20 minutes.
I said so. It's a follow-up.
No, it can't
No, but members cannot say no, man.
A member cannot say no.
Why are you saying?
Honourable Mkwili, we allocated time and we've given the professors a lot of time more than all other speakers. So please, let's stop it here and let's go for tea. We have 10 minutes for tea, eh?
Thank you. Thank you.